Hi everyone. Today, I have the privilege of taking you through the Chapter 7, Government and Policy Framework for Agribusiness. This chapter is particularly close to my heart because agribusiness in India doesn't just depend on private effort or entrepreneurial drive. It is also deeply influenced by the policies, laws, and support system created by our government. Without this, farmers and businesses alike cannot thrive by scale. My name is Vaibhav Samant. I'm a business leader with over 2 decades of experience across sales leadership, business transformation, and entrepreneurship. Over my career, I have worked across industries in consumer goods, retail, telecom, consulting, leading large-scale operations and transformation programs for both startups and corporates. Today, I lead a fast-scaling agritech venture, Revasa Farms. This is building future-ready supply chains and sustainable ecosystems in India's fruits and vegetable sector. With that context, let's begin exploring how the government and policy framework shapes the future of Indian agribusinesses. Now that I have introduced myself, let us begin the foundation of India's agriculture and rural development policies. In India, agriculture and rural development policies form the backbone of our farming system. They are designed to enhance productivity, ensure food security, and uplift rural communities. These policies do much more than improve farming outputs. They directly influence the lives of millions by improving incomes, providing access to markets, and creating opportunities in villages. At the same time, these policies are constantly challenged by realities such as climate change, fragmented land holdings, and unequal access to resources. The government's intent is to address these challenges holistically through irrigation programs, infrastructure building, financial inclusion, and social development schemes. When we step back, we see that agriculture policy is just not about farming. It is about rural transformation, about shaping the growth trajectory of India's economy from the ground up. Having seen the broad role of policies, let's look specifically at how they drive agriculture productivity. One of the most critical goals of agriculture policy is to drive productivity. The government invests heavily in research and development. Whether it is to develop improved seed varieties, promote mechanization, or bring modern farming techniques into the hands of smallholders. Alongside research, the irrigation programs and soil management programs are prioritized. Access to water is life itself for agriculture, and policies that strengthen irrigation systems and promote scientific soil health management directly increase yields. Another focus is infrastructure. Without proper storage, cold chains, and rural transport, net farmers lose a significant portion of their harvest post-production. By enhancing infrastructure, policies reduce waste, improve market connectivity, and create the foundation for long-term sustainability. Together, these efforts make agriculture not just more productive, but also more reliable. Of course, productivity is incomplete without secure access to land. That's where land reforms and property rights come in. Land is the most valuable asset in agriculture, and how it is distributed and protected determines the prosperity of rural India. That is why government policies around land reform are so critical. Equitable land access ensures that smallholder farmers and marginalized groups are not left out of progress. Secure property rights are equally important. When a farmer knows that their land is legally theirs, they gain access to credit and they are willing to invest in long-term improvements like irrigation systems or orchards. Reforming outdated land laws is another important step. Many land disputes in India stem from the lack of transparency and slow legal systems. A supportive legal framework that clarifies ownership, prevents conflicts, and protects farmers' rights creates the confidence necessary for sustainable agriculture development. But land alone cannot sustain growth. Without proper roads, power, and water, farmers cannot reach their full potential. So no agriculture policy can succeed without addressing rural infrastructure. Road connectivity ensures that farmers can move their produce quickly and at a lower cost. A reliable transport network is the difference between perishable vegetables reaching the market fresh or being wasted on the way. Similarly, electricity access is transformative. When rural households and farms have electricity, they can use modern equipment, improve productivity, and also raise their quality of life. Water supply is equally essential, not just for irrigation, but also for basic drinking water and sanitation in rural communities. Policies that ensure reliable water access, health, and productive villages. In short, rural infrastructure is the bridge that connects government policy with real, tangible improvements in the lives of farmers. Infrastructure sets the stage, but the next big question is, can we make growth sustainable? Agriculture in India must not only be productive, but also sustainable. That is why policies are increasingly focusing on environmental conservation. One key area is the promotion of organic farming. which reduces chemical use and protects both soil and water. Agroforestry is another important initiative. By integrating trees with crops, biodiversity is conserved and ecosystem services are enhanced. Equally critical is climate adaptation. With increasing climate variability, farmers face unpredictable risk. Policies that support climate-resilient crops, water-efficient technologies, and sustainable farming practices help safeguard livelihoods against environmental shocks. These measures ensure that the agriculture grows in harmony with nature, protecting both today's farmers and future generations. Sustainability works best when combined with strong social and economic support for communities. When we talk about agriculture, we often focus on seeds, soil, and markets. But the truth is that farming thrives only when the communities around farmers are strong. Policies that invest in education are vital. Imagine a farmer's daughter in a rural village learning modern techniques in school. She may return home, teach her father how to use a soil testing kit, or even manage the farm's finances. That one spark of knowledge can transform an entire household. Healthcare is equally critical. A farmer who falls sick during the harvest season does just lose income for himself, but also weakens the food supply chain. When rural health centers are available and reliable, the workforce stays productivity. Financial inclusion is another lifeline. For example, a small farmer who can access bank loan rather than borrow from moneylender and fall into debt schemes. These interventions may sound basic, but they change lives. Education brings empowerment, healthcare brings resilience, and finance brings security. Together, these pillars form the social and economic foundation on which strong agriculture growth rests. But the most important beneficiaries of such supports are smallholders and family farms. Across India, agriculture is dominated by the smallholder and family farms. These are plots often less than 2 hectares, tilled by generations of the same family. They may not have the glamour of large estates, but they feed the nation. Policies that strengthen smallholders have a direct multiplier effect. For example, when government provides technical training, a farmer in Nasik growing grapes learns how to prune vines scientifically. His yields improve, his income rises, and soon others in the village adopt the same methods. That one intervention spreads knowledge like ripples in a pond. Financial support is another enabler. Subsidized loans or crop insurance protect families from devastating losses. Imagine a farmer whose onion crop fails because of unseasonal rains. Insurance ensures his family still has the money for school fees and daily expenses. Market access policies complete the circle. Cooperatives and digital platforms help small farmers bypass middlemen. A story I recall is of a farmer group in Maharashtra that pooled their produce to supply directly to urban supermarkets. They earned almost 30% more than selling through the mandi. Smallholders may be individually vulnerable, but collectively, with the right policy support, they become resilient, competitive, and central to India's food security. Yet, supporting smallholders also reveals the crack in implementation. Policies are powerful in theory, but their impact depends on how they are executed on the ground. One challenge is coordination. Imagine 3 different departments launching separate irrigation schemes in the same district without talking to each other. The result is duplication, wasted funds, and half-finished projects. Market access is another stumbling block. Even today, many farmers sell produce without knowing the fair market price. Take the case of a vegetable farmer who harvested cucumbers but had no transport to reach markets. He sold at a throwaway price to a middleman, while the same cucumbers later sold in the city at 5 times the rate. Environmental risk adds another layer. In Vidarbha, unseasonal rains often wipe out cotton crops. Policies may offer relief packages, but delays in delivery mean farmers are left exposed when they need support the most. The gap between paper and practice is what limits the true potential of agriculture policies. Unless coordination is tightened, markets made transparent, and climate adoption made practical, the real beneficiaries, the smallholder farmers, remained underserved. Bridging this gap is perhaps India's greatest challenge of agriculture policy framework. That's why we must identify future directions that integrate productivity, inclusion, and sustainability. As we look ahead, the lesson is clear. India needs integrated approaches. Productivity, sustainability, and social development cannot run in silos. For instance, building a canal system improves irrigation. But if the soil is not conserved and farmers are not trained, productivity gains vanish in a few years. Another direction is empowering smallholders. Giving them technology, access to credit, and direct market linkages has disproportionately positive impact. I often say when a small farmer thrives, an entire village prospers. Climate change makes adaptation urgent. Drought-resistant crops, micro-irrigation systems, and solar-powered cold storage units are no longer futuristic ideas. They are immediate necessities. Imagine a farmer in Rajasthan growing millet with 40% less water because he uses government-backed micro-irrigation. This is how climate-smart policy turns into real resilience. Finally, coordination must improve. Technology platform can bring together different ministries, private companies, and farmers under one system. Only when all stakeholders put in the same direction with policies translates into the outcomes. The future of agribusiness is not just about one policy or one scheme. It is about integrated, adaptive, collaborative framework that can truly transform rural Indian agriculture. And one of the strongest policy tools to achieve this is the financial aid and subsidies for farmers. Money is often the most immediate constraint for farmers. Financial aid and subsidies bridge this gap, empowering them to take bold steps. Subsidies make inputs affordable, grants encourage innovation, and insurance protects against disasters. Together, these tools build resilience. Think of a marginal farmer in Karnataka who receives a seed subsidy. Instead of reusing old, low-yielding seeds, he invests in high-quality hybrids. His harvest doubles, and with this, in his income. Or consider a flood-affected farmer in Bihar. Because he enrolled in the Pradhan Mantri Fasal Bima Yojana, his losses are compensated and he can replant next season without borrowing from moneylenders. The psychological impact is just as important. A farmer who knows he has government support is more willing to try new crops, adopt machinery, or experiment with sustainable practices. These programs create not just economic security but confidence to innovate. For India, financial aid is not merely expenditure. It is investment in food security and rural stability. When structured well, subsidies aid as a growth engine, lifting millions of farmers while also strengthening the agribusiness ecosystem. Let's break this down further by looking at specific types of subsidies available. Subsidies are the nuts and bolts of the agriculture policy. Input subsidies reduce the cost of seeds, fertilizers, pesticides, and irrigation. This is why a farmer in Punjab can afford high-yield wheat seeds without exhausting his savings. Fuel subsidies play a similar role, lowering the cost of tractors and pumps so mechanization can become viable even for smallholders. Interest rate subsidies are especially impactful. Consider a young farmer in Gujarat who wants to buy a drip irrigation system. A regular loan may charge 12% interest, but with subsidy he pays only 4%. Suddenly, what was once impossible becomes affordable. His yields increase, his water use declines, and his story inspires others in the village. Of course, subsidies must be balanced. Overuse of fertilizer subsidies, for instance, has harmed soil health in parts of India. That is why the government is now steering subsidies towards eco-friendly fertilizers and bio-inputs. Subsidies are not handouts, they are strategic levers. When designed with care and monitored closely, they transform agriculture from subsistence to sustainability and from vulnerability to resilience. Beyond subsidies, grants play a very different but equally important role in innovation. Grants are not about recurring support, but about enabling one-time leaps. For instance, research and development grants allow universities and institutions to develop new crop varieties, pest-resistant seeds, or mechanization suited to local conditions. Think how drought-tolerant rice developed through such grants has helped farmers in eastern India withstand erratic monsoons. Climate change adoption grants are another example. In Maharashtra's drought-prone regions, grants have supported the construction of rainwater harvesting structures and drip irrigation. The results is not just higher yields, but also reduced stress in groundwater. Infrastructure development grants, such as those used for building rural cold storage facilities, directly cut post-harvest losses. A farmer who once lost half his tomato harvest due to spoilage can now store and sell it over time, ensuring better prices. The strength of grants is that they create long-term capacity. Unlike subsidies that provide relief, grants builds asset, infrastructure, and knowledge systems. When directed properly, they don't just help a single farmer, but uplift entire communities. Grants are investment in resilience, ensuring India's agriculture can face tomorrow's challenges with confidence. Alongside grants, direct financial aid programs provide a much-needed safety net. Financial aid programs complement subsidies and grants by directly protecting the farmers against risk. Crop insurance schemes such as the Pradhan Mantri Fasal Bima Yojana provide a lifeline when nature turns hostile. Picture a farmer in Orissa whose paddy fields is devastated by cyclone. Without insurance, he would face ruin, but with government-backed coverage, he receives compensation and is able to replant. Income support programs also matter. In drought-affected regions of Karnataka, direct aid to households help families buy essentials and survive until the next crop cycle. These schemes may not make farmers rich, but they prevent that cycle of debt and despair that traps many rural families. Loan programs like the Kisan Credit Card make working capital easily available. A vegetable farmer who needs cash for seeds, fertilizer, and transport can access it quickly, without turning to money lenders charging exorbitant rates. The Mudra Yojana has extended similar support for allied activities. Like dairy and poultry, giving farmers multiple income streams, together these financial aid programs create a safety net. Farming will always carry risks, but with strong policies, those risks are no longer pushed families into poverty. Instead, they enable recovery, continuity, and dignity for the rural households. How do we know if all this support actually works? Let us look at its impact. The ultimate question is, does financial support actually improve agriculture? The answer is yes, and the evidence to support is clear. Access to quality inputs and machinery increases productivity. A farmer who can buy a tractor through subsidized loan tills his land faster, plants on time, and harvests more efficiently. His yields rise, so does his income. Risk mitigation is another major impact. Insurance schemes reduce the fear of total loss. When farmers know they are covered, they are more willing to plant high-value crops rather than sticking to low-risk, low-return options. For example, in Maharashtra, grape farmers expanded their vineyards once crop insurance became available, boosting both exports and local incomes. Financial support also underpins food security. Stable production ensures steady supplies of cereals, pulses, fruits, and vegetables to our markets. Without this intervention, seasonal shocks could cause shortages and price spikes. In short, subsidies, grants, and aid programs do more than relieve distress. They fuel growth. They create conditions where farmers can take risks, innovate, and produce abundantly. Strong financial support systems are the backbone of both farmer prosperity and national food stability. Even with positive impact, challenges in delivering financial aid remain significant. Financial aid is still not without its challenges. One common issue is misallocation. Aid sometimes fails to reach genuine beneficiaries due to weak targeting or corruption. For instance, subsidies meant for small farmers may end up being cornered by large landowners with better access to paperwork. Dependency culture is another concern. If aid is perceived as guaranteed, some farmers may hesitate to innovate or diversify. We have seen cases where fertilizer subsidies, while improving yields, have also encouraged overuse, leading to soil degradation. Environmental concerns also arise. Heavy subsidies on urea, for example, have lowered cost but caused long-term soil health issues. Correcting this requires not just redesigning aid, but also educating farmers about sustainable practices. The delivery mechanism itself is cumbersome. Complex forms, delayed disbursements, or lack of digital access can discourage farmers from applying. Imagine a farmer in Bihar having to travel 30 kilometers to a government office just to file an insurance claim. By the time compensation arrives, his next planting season is already lost. These challenges highlight the need for transparency, digital platforms, and tighter monitoring. Without reforms, the intent of financial aid risks being undermined by inefficiency, unintended consequences. Despite these issues, certain flagship government schemes have stood out. India has launched multiple flagship schemes to support farmers, each addressing a specific pain point. The Kisan Credit Card, KCC, is perhaps the most impactful. It provides affordable short-term credit, allowing farmers to purchase seeds and fertilizers or even meet household needs during lean months. Millions of small and marginal farmers rely on KCC to manage seasonal cash flows. Another crucial scheme is the Pradhan Mantri Fasal Bima Yojana, which offers crop insurance against losses from floods, droughts, or pests. I recall visiting a village in Vidarbha where farmers told me by PMFBY payouts had literally saved them from bankruptcy after unexpected rains destroyed their cotton fields. The Mudra Yojana extends support beyond crops. It finances allied activities like poultry, fisheries, and small-scale food processing. The diversification reduces the dependency on one crop, creates additional income stream for rural families. These schemes matter because they are not abstract policies that directly touch lives. A loan that arrives on time, an insurance payout that saves a farm, or a grant that enables a new business can change the trajectory of a family for generations. That is the true power of government intervention. These schemes are now being aligned with sustainability goals. Financial support must also guide farmers towards sustainability. Subsidies are now being steered towards organic fertilizers and biopesticides, reducing the dependence on chemicals. In states like Sikkim, this shift has transformed entire farming systems into organic models, giving farmers both premium prices and healthier soil. Water conservation is another focus. Grants for micro-irrigation systems or rainwater harvesting allow farmers to do more with less. I recall a farmer in Gujarat who, after installing drip irrigation with government support, reduced his water by almost half while increasing his yield. He now trains other farmers in the village to adopt the same system. Policies also encourage crop diversification. Instead of over-relying on water incentive crops like sugarcane or rice, financial aid is nudging farmers towards pulses, oilseeds, and millets that are more climate resilient. This reduces environmental stress and also meets the growing market demand for healthier grains. These financial policies demonstrate that sustainability and profitability are not opposites. With the right incentives, farmers can adopt eco-friendly practices that protect natural resources while improving incomes. This alignment of policy, sustainability, and farmer prosperity is the way forward. Taken together, they point us towards key next steps for smarter support systems. Financial aid and subsidies remain the backbone of Indian agriculture. They provide the essential safety net without which millions of farmers would struggle to survive. Yet the next step is not simply about increasing aid, but improving how it is targeted, delivered, and communicated. For example, many farmers are unaware of the schemes available to them. I once met a vegetable farmer near Pune who has never heard of a Kisan credit card. Despite being eligible, he relied entirely on informal loans at high interest. With better awareness campaigns, such gaps can be closed. Technology is another step. Direct benefit transfer linked to Aadhaar and Jan Dhan accounts have already reduced leakages. Extending this model to all forms of financial aid ensures that funds reach the right hands at the right time. Innovation should also be encouraged. Subsidies not only lower costs but also reward farmers who adopt sustainable practices, whether that's water-saving irrigation or organic inputs. This balance between relief and innovation will make financial aid future-ready. The message is simple. Financial support has worked, but its delivery must be sharper, smarter, and more aligned with sustainability. That is how aid can become a true growth multiplier. But aid alone is not enough. Execution depends on the roles of government agencies and NGOs. Agriculture is too vast for one actor alone. That is why government agencies and NGOs work side by side to shape rural development. Government ministries design policies, manage subsidies, and provide extension services. But it is the NGOs that often bring these policies to life by working directly with communities. Consider rural infrastructure. While the government may sanction funds for road building, it is often NGOs that mobilize local participation, ensuring the roads actually serve farmers' needs. In times of disaster, such as floods in Bihar, NGOs have been quicker to deliver emergency relief than government bodies. This partnership ensures both scale and sensitivity. The government brings resources and authority, while NGOs bring agility and community trust. In Andhra Pradesh, for example, NGOs have successfully trained women farmers in organic practice, with government departments later scaling this model statewide. The true power lies in collaboration. Policies become meaningful when they are co-created and co-implemented. While ministries, banks, NGOs, and communities move together, agriculture doesn't just grow, it thrives inclusively and sustainably. Let's first understand the key government agencies that shape this sector. At the core of policy execution are the government agencies themselves. The Ministry of Agriculture and Farmers' Welfare drive overall direction, introducing schemes and funding research. Departments of Rural Development focus on roads, electricity, and housing, ensuring farming families have a stable environment. Financial institutions such as NABARD and government banks provide loans and grants and credit products tailored to agriculture. These agencies are not abstract entities. They touch everyday lives. Take NABARD's support for self-help groups. It has empowered thousands of rural women to start micro-enterprises. Or consider the National Horticulture Board, which promotes cold chains and food processing units, enabling farmers to move forward beyond raw produce. Coordination between these agencies is what determines the success. When banks, ministries, and state departments align, farmers experience a smooth access to credit, subsidies, and training. But when they work in silos, farmers often face red tape and delays. Ultimately, strong agriculture growth depends on this. Non-governmental organizations have become vital partners in rural and agriculture development. Unlike government bodies, which work through large-scale programs, NGOs engage closely with their communities. Their strength lies in trust and accessibility. For example, in drought-hit Bundelkhand, NGOs organize farmer training camps to promote water conservation techniques like contour bunding and check dams. Farmers who once struggled with water scarcity began to see more reliable harvest. In many such regions, it was NGOs, not government offices, that farmers turned to first. NGOs also play a key role in advocacy. They give marginalized groups, smallholder farmers, women cultivators, or landless laborers a voice in shaping policies. By documenting challenges and sharing them with policymakers, they ensure that the grassroots perspective is not lost in the corridors of power. Their role extends to education and capacity building. Programs on financial literacy, sustainable practice, and market linkages often come with NGO-led workshops. And when disasters strike, from floods in Assam to cyclones in Odisha, NGOs provide quick relief in ways that complement official response. By filling gaps in service delivery, NGOs make sure that the rural transformation is not just policy-driven but also people-driven. Meanwhile, government agencies themselves are responsible for implementing programs at scale.